So tonight we're wanting to look at another one of these 40-day situations. We've looked at several of them in a sort of a series, even though the events are not particularly connected. It is interesting, at least to me, to see some of these major events in the Bible that we're told about, and how 40 days and 40 nights, many times, in the case of what we're looking at tonight, it's 40 days, doesn't mention the nights, but it's interesting with the flood and Noah's time that we saw, and with Moses going up into Mount Sinai to receive the law two times. There was that period of 40 days and 40 nights, and then the spies in the land of Israel, and they went there for 40 days. So those were some of the events that we looked at where that number came up. And as it does so often. Another one of those that we find in the scriptures that we want to look at that is, I think, without any dispute or argument, probably one of the most famous events in the Bible, probably right up there with Noah and the Ark. How about David and Goliath? That's one of the most famous events in the scriptures. Wouldn't we agree with that? I mean, just about everybody's heard of that. I mean, how many people have heard of David and Goliath? Even if they couldn't find it in the Bible, if their life depended on it. But still, that's one of those things God has made to be well known to all mankind. And we'll see this this period of time comes up again in this situation, with 40 days being the period of time that Goliath was in the valley blaspheming and defying God. So we want to go to 1 Samuel chapter 17, which is the chapter in the Bible where this event is located. So unlike so many that are out there in the world, hopefully we know how to find or where to find in the scriptures where this is, where we're told about David and Goliath. But 1 Samuel 17. So that's one of those references that's kind of good to maybe fix in our minds. 1 Samuel 17, that's the chapter about David and Goliath. So when we go there to the beginning of the chapter, and we're planning just to read through this very lengthy chapter tonight as it tells the entire account here, and then we want to look at some of the lessons that we learn from it as we're told in Scripture, as we're trying to do with each of these. So we do have lots to learn from these events. Certainly that's the case here with David, a man after God's own heart, as we see his faith in God on display in this situation with the giant named Goliath. So the background of it, 1 Samuel chapter 17, as we start to read in verse 1, it says, "Now the Philistines gathered together their armies to battle, and were gathered together at Shochoh, which belongeth to Judah, and pitched between Shochoh and Azekah in Ephesdamim. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched in the valley of Elah, and set the battle in array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on a mountain on the one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, and there was a valley between them. And there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span." So Gath is one of those five principal cities of the Philistines. They had five lords, so they were really a confederation of city-states, Gath being one of their five principal cities, and they had a lord or a king over each of those cities, those major cities, and together those five comprised this nation of the Philistines and all of their smaller towns in their territory. But Gath was one of the five major cities of the Philistines, and this was the hometown of Goliath. Now, looking at other scriptures that we have, we know that Goliath was of this race of the giants that were the children of Anak, the sons of Anak, goes back to, in fact, we were reading about them In the last lesson that we looked at about this, when the spies went into the land of Canaan for 40 days, and they saw the sons of Anak there, those giants, and that's part of what caused the hearts of those 10 spies that did not have faith in God to melt and to murmur and cause the people to murmur against the Lord. But those that race of giants, they were from the east side of the Jordan River, primarily. And but there were some from that race that ended up in other lands. Well, part of that had to do with the defeat of those giants by the Israelites in battle. They did destroy all of those people in Moses' time before they crossed the River Jordan. The ones on the east, Sihon and Og, they took their lands, and that included that land where that race of giants was. And we also know that there were some of them that were in the region of Hebron that Caleb defeated and when he got his inheritance there. And so there were a remnant left, and they appeared to have scattered, but that we can see that their descendants were in other locations in that region. And here is this giant Goliath that was from Gath in the land of the Philistines. And it says his height was 6 cubits and a span. Now, what's a cubit? That's not a form of measurement that we typically use today, but a cubit was a measurement from an elbow to the fingertip, and that is very, very consistently around 18 inches or a foot and a half. So if someone were 6 cubits and a span being the width of a hand, the 6 cubits would be how many feet? That's 9 feet. So he was over 9 feet, 9 feet and several inches tall. So somewhere close to 9.5 feet tall. I know when we've seen Brother JD come in here when he visits, you know, we all have to look up to him, but he would look like a dwarf compared to Goliath. I mean, Goliath would be another 3 feet taller than he is. So that would be somebody we would be. How tall is it up there to the top, Jan? About 15 feet. So he'd be a lot closer to that ceiling than we are to the door frame back there. But anyway, we would all be having our faces way up in the air to be able to see him. So he would have been a height that would have been something that we've never seen in a human. Now, of course, there are plenty of those who don't believe what God says in his word, and they will scoff at that. But is this real? Was there a race of giants that were of that kind of stature? And the answer is yes. Are they around today? We don't have any around today like that, but they were there. God made them that way, he was one of them. So that shows the height of this man. And he obviously wasn't all height with no size otherwise. He wasn't just a little slender or skinny man. He was a very strong man to go with the height. As it describes his armor here in these next verses, it says, "And he had a helmet of brass upon his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass, and he had greaves of brass upon his legs, and a target of brass between his shoulders, and the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and the spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron, and one bearing a shield went before him." So they had another man just to carry his shield. So this was an enormous man with armor that was of great size and weight, and it says he was a champion. So this was a man that had been a warrior all of his days, as Saul the king is also going to point out. So he's been a warrior from his youth. This very mighty man, physically very impressive, very mighty, with all of his armor. He would have been certainly someone that would have made men who were not having their faith in God most likely to tremble, as these Israelites sadly were doing. And it says that he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel and said unto them, "Why are you come out to set your battle in array? Am not I a Philistine, and ye servants to Saul? Choose you a man for you, and let him come down to me. If he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then will we be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall ye be our servants and serve us." And the Philistine said, "I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." When Saul and all Israel heard those words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now, with any other army around in that time who would have not been people of God, would this have been an appropriate response to be cowering in fear on this mountain and not to be have anyone to have the courage, actually in this case, faith in God to go and face this man? Well, that would have been a normal reaction seeing someone like him. And there he is speaking against the Lord is what he's doing. And so he's defying the armies of Israel to send somebody to go and fight with him. And he's promising that the Philistines would willingly be Israel's servants if someone can defeat Goliath one-on-one. Did he mean that? Well, how can we say? But did he have any idea or expectation that that would even be possible when he's saying these words? He was not even thinking of that could even ever happen. But he was fully expecting. And there's much pride in him in these words that he's uttering with the expectation, the firm belief that he would prevail in any one-on-one battle with anyone that the Israelites could send against him. But he is not taking into account the God of heaven. But the saddest part is that the Israelites aren't either. Why were they greatly afraid and dismayed? And this isn't just men in the army of Israel. What's Saul doing, their king? Is he telling the people to have their faith in the Lord? And what had the Lord promised them? That as long as, what was one of the great blessings promised? And we could go to Deuteronomy 28. We're not going to go over there right now, but I'll just give you the reference as we've looked at that many times. But Deuteronomy chapter 28. It's a long chapter full of blessings to start with and then curses that were for Israel depending upon whether they obeyed the commandments the Lord gave them. But one of the great promises the Lord gave them is if they kept his word, he said, "Your enemies will come before you one way and flee before you seven ways." Now, on the other side, he said, if you don't keep my word, if you disobey my commandments, he said, you'll go before your enemies one way and flee before them seven ways. But if they were keeping God's commandments, was there any question about whether God would fulfill his promise? He would fulfill that promise. It was a promise of God. Isn't that why, in their last lesson with those 10 spies, why did Joshua and Caleb have no fear of the giants or of any of those walled cities in Canaan or anything about what was in Canaan? Why didn't they think that there was anything to fear there? Why did they say and try to encourage all the people, "Let's go up now. The Lord will give it into our hands"? Well, what was different about Joshua and Caleb? They all had the same promises of God, but Joshua and Caleb believed it. They fully believed that God was going to do what he said. And so they had no doubt about what the outcome would be. They had no hesitancy to go in and fight the fight the Lord gave them to fight. And they firmly believed that God was going to give them a victory in that. They believed what God said. Now, ultimately, what happened? Exactly that. But all the rest of the people, they didn't believe. Well, what's going on now? I mean, this is many years into the future from that event in Moses' time. But here we are in the time of King Saul. Are the people here really any different than the ones that were in the wilderness when the spies came back from their spying out the land of Canaan? It's the same lack of faith. They don't believe God's promise. Why should they be afraid of this man? He was an enemy of Israel, and God promised to give them a victory over their enemies, including the Philistines specifically. And how many times had God already given them victories over them? What about in Samson's time? What about when Samuel was their judge? What about earlier in Saul's own reign when Jonathan had his faith in God and went with his armor bearer and slew a garrison of 20 of the Philistines, which led to a great victory over their army, their entire army in that time, early in Saul's reign? I mean, this had happened over and over again, specifically with the Philistines, that God had given them victory, given them a victory over them many times when they were obeying his word and had his faith, had their faith in him. But here they are lacking in that faith, and so they're dismayed and greatly afraid. Verses 12 through 16, it says, "Now David was the son of that Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, and he had 8 sons, and the man was among men for an old man in the days of Saul. And the 3 eldest sons of Jesse went and followed Saul to the battle, and the names of his 3 sons that went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, and next unto him Abinadab, and the 3rd Shammah. And David was the youngest, and the 3 eldest followed Saul. But David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem." Verse 16 says, "And the Philistine drew near morning and evening and presented himself 40 days. Well, morning and evening, so we could say 40 days and 40 evenings here. Here's that period of time again. It's interesting that we see it once more. But that's how long that Goliath is in this valley on a daily basis, speaking all of those words and with all of that blasphemy against the Lord. 40 days he's doing this. So in verse 17, it says, "And Jesse said unto David his son, Take now for thy brethren an ephah of the parched corn and these 10 loaves, and run to the camp to thy brethren, and carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain of their 1,000, and look how thy brethren fare, and take their pledge. Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah, fighting with the Philistines." Well, at least they were prepared. They were set in array to do so, but were they engaged in a battle? They were engaged in fear. It says, "And David rose up early in the morning and left the sheep with a keeper and took and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the trench as the host was going forth to the fight and shouted for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army. And David left his carriage in the hand of the keeper of the carriage and ran into the army and came and saluted his brethren. And as he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines and spake according to the same words. And David heard them." So what's different about this day than all the ones that preceded it? There was one man that had not heard the words of Goliath all those other days that now hears him. David now hears the words. And this one man hearing those words, and he's a young man, but this young man hearing the words of Goliath is what changes everything. The words aren't any different. 40 days of this, David hears the words now. And it says, "And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were sore afraid. And the men of Israel said, Have you seen this man that has come up? Surely to defy Israel is he come up. And it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel. And David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, What shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered him after this manner, saying, So shall it be done to the man that killeth him. And Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men, And Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, "Why camest thou down hither, and with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle." Now, this is that Eliab in the previous chapter. If you went back to chapter 16, he's the firstborn. He was the first that presented himself before Samuel, the prophet, when God had and sent him to hold a feast in Bethlehem, or in his place, to Bethlehem and choose or anoint one of the sons of Jesse to be king of Israel. And when Eliab went before him, he was a tall, handsome man, and Samuel's reaction was, "Surely the Lord's anointed is before me." And what did God tell him at that moment? Don't look at his face. Don't look at his height. He said, because God does not see as man sees, because man looks on the outward appearance, but God looks on the heart. That's 1 Samuel 16 and verse 7. Well, here's that same Eliab now in chapter 17. Has Eliab had faith in God all of these 40 days as he's there part of the army? And he's heard the same words that his youngest brother David now is hearing. But what has Eliab done for those 40 days of hearing these same words? Nothing. And when David hears the words, and David is already stirred up to do something about it, now Eliab is accusing David of having abandoned the sheep, his responsibility to keep the sheep, coming there for no legitimate reason, that he just wants to watch the battle. Well, all of that is false. So he's speaking falsely against David. Who sent him? His father Jesse. What does it say that David did? Did David just abandon the sheep, or did he leave them with a keeper while he was away obeying what his father Jesse had sent him to do? He did exactly what his father told him to do, and he didn't abandon the sheep. He had a keeper for them, and now he's doing what Jesse sent him to do. And he's hearing the words of this man and his blasphemy, and David is ready to act. And so David responds to the false accusation from his eldest brother and said, "What have I now done? Is there not a cause? Is there not a cause?" Was there not a cause for David to be doing something at this moment? There was a great cause. Here is this enemy of Israel blaspheming God, and there was a cause. There was a reason that someone should go face this giant and defeat him. So it says that he turned from him toward another and spake after the same manner, and the people answered him again after the former manner. And when the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul, and he sent for him. And David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth." What does that matter? What is Saul not considering? God. Saul doesn't have faith in God. And all he's looking at is how big Goliath is and how much experience in battle he has, how young and inexperienced and little David is in comparison. But what does that matter? That wasn't the proper equation to consider. What is David thinking about? Here's an enemy of Israel blaspheming against God, and he needs to be defeated, and he needs to be defeated right now, and God is going to be with David as he promised, and that's the only thing that David is thinking about. And so how does he answer Saul? David said unto Saul, "Thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear and took a lamb out of the flock, and I went out after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and smote him and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing hath defied the armies of the living God." David said, "Moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said unto David, "Go, and the Lord be with thee." So why did David, was David full of self-confidence? He was not. His confidence, his faith was fully in God, and he credited the Lord with being the one that delivered his sheep and David from the lion and the bear. That was his responsibility to protect the sheep. How many people would run if a lion and a bear came out? But David didn't. His responsibility was to guard the sheep. And so when that happened, did he hesitate to go one-on-one with a lion or with a bear? He didn't hesitate. Why? He believed God was going to take care of him and deliver him in that situation, because he was doing a job and he was going to do it faithfully. So there was no fear there because of his faith in God. And he fully believed that God was going to keep his word and give him a victory over Goliath. And he did not regard at all the size or the experience of Goliath as a warrior. And what could Saul say against that? He said, "The Lord be with thee." And Saul armed David with his armor, and he put on a helmet of brass upon his head, and he also armed him with a coat of mail. Now also remember, how big was Saul compared to the other Israelites? I mean, he was a head taller than everybody in Israel. Now, he was a little thing compared to Goliath, but what would Saul's armor have been on David? He would have been swallowed by Saul's armor for sure. But this wasn't his, and it wasn't made for David. But he's the one. Saul, did David ask for armor? He didn't. Why? He didn't. Did he feel like he needed this kind of armor for this fight? No, he didn't. But Saul put it on him. And it says, "Then David girded his sword upon his armor, and he essayed to go, for he had not proved it. And David said unto Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not proved them. And David put them off him. And he took his staff in his hand and chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook and put them in a shepherd's bag, which he had even in a scrip. And his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. And the Philistine came on and drew near unto David, and the man that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy and of a fair countenance. And the Philistine said unto David, Am I a dog that thou comest to me with staves? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, Come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the field. So Goliath is looking at this like he's being insulted by having this young kid come up in front of him with nothing but a staff and his shepherd's bag. Well, he's going to find out. He's going to find out the truth about this very shortly. But he's cursing David and promising to feed David's flesh to the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the field. Then said David to the Philistine, Thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day, now notice, he doesn't say, here's what I'm going to do to you. He says, this day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee and take thine head from thee. And I will give the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. So David has his faith fully in God and says, not only is Goliath going to die, but he says all the army of the Philistines is going down that day, because God was going to deliver them into the hands of the Israelites. And David, as he's doing this, was speaking those words for whose sake? He said that God was going to do this work for all the earth to know that there was a God in Israel. But he also says, and this assembly. Was David recognizing the lack of faith in all of his brethren? I mean, his physical brothers too, 3 of them that were there, but all of his fellow Israelites. He desired that they would all believe that God was going to fight their battles for them. And so he said that the battle is the Lord's. Now, were the Israelites believing that right now? No, but David did. And so for their sake, he speaks these words. It says, "And it came to pass when the Philistine arose and came and drew nigh to meet David, that David hasted and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand in his bag and took thence a stone and slang it and smote the Philistine in his forehead, that the stone sunk into his forehead, and he fell upon the face of the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone and smote the Philistine and slew him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore David ran and stood upon the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of the sheath thereof and slew him and cut off his head therewith. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled." So when he hit him with the stone, I mean, that was a knockout blow, but to kill him and finish him off, he did exactly what he said that God was going to enable him to do, and that was to take his head from him, and he did with Goliath's own sword. And so all the Philistines see this, and now they're running. "And the men of Israel and of Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines." So did this have an impact on all the rest of them? It did. So that moves them into action. And he says, "Until thou come to the valley and to the gates of Ekron," which is of the Philistines. So they chased them all the way out of the land of Israel. And it says, "And the wounded of the Philistines fell down by the way to Sherarim, even unto Gath and unto Ekron. And the children of Israel returned from chasing after the Philistines, and they spoiled their tents. And David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem. But he put his armor in his tent. And when Saul saw David go forth against the Philistine, he said unto Abner, the captain of the host, 'Abner, whose son is this youth?' And Abner said, 'As thy soul liveth, O king, I cannot tell.' And the king said, 'Inquire thou whose son this stripling is.' And as David returned from the slaughter of the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. And Saul said to him, 'Whose son art thou, thou young man?' And David answered, 'I am the son of thy servant Jesse the Bethlehemite.'" Now later in the New Testament, in Hebrews chapter 11, we read about all those examples of faith that we have to encourage us in running our race and following Christ. And David is mentioned, along with several others, as at this point, it's a summary of so many that are not given the details of, which are right here, such as where we've just read tonight. In Hebrews 11:32 through 34, he says, "What shall I more say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon, and of Barak, and of Samson, and of Jephthah, of David also, and Samuel, and of the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens." How many of those things, when he mentions David by name in verse 32, how many of the descriptions of what David and these others that he names in verse 32 did David himself do in those next two verses? And by what did he do it? Through faith. Well, we saw his faith expressed in his word, his own words, that the Lord would do this, and he did. So David fully trusted the Lord. The Lord gave him the victory. But did David subdue kingdoms? Did he work righteousness? Did he obtain promises? Did he stop the mouths of lions? He'd already done that. And quench the violence of fire. He escaped the edge of the sword. And he was made strong out of weakness. He did wax valiant in fight. He did turn to flight the armies of the aliens. Much of that he did right there on this day when he slew Goliath. But he's given as an example of faith to encourage us. He's part of that great cloud of witnesses that surrounds us. Those men of faith and women of faith in God that obeyed him, that we've been given to encourage us. In 1 Samuel 21, verses 8 and 9, 1 Samuel 21, 8 and 9, David was fleeing from Saul at this point, who was jealous of him. In fleeing, he went to Ahimelech, the high priest, in 1 Samuel 21, verse 8. And David said to Ahimelech, "And is there not here under thine hand spear or sword? For I have neither brought my sword nor my weapons with me, because the king's business required haste. Now, who is this king according to God's determination at this point? David. Because God had rejected Saul and had David been anointed as king. So this is the king's business, and it did require haste. And David being that one, and he had to flee, he was fleeing from Saul. And the priest said, "The sword of Goliath the Philistine, whom thou slewest in the valley of Elah, behold, it is here wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If thou wilt take that, take it, for there is no other save that here." And David said, "There is none like that. Give it me." Now, this was David doing here, much like he did when he went to face Goliath. He had to have something that God would use as a tool to bring Goliath down, and he chose five stones. Well, did David trust in rocks or the Lord? He trusted in the Lord, as we saw. Well, getting this spear now. I mean, is he trusting in a spear or a sword? I mean, he gets the sword of Goliath. No, that's not what he's trusting in. And how many psalms do we have that express the trust in the Lord that David had that we saw on display there in 1 Samuel 17? But we can also see how special that sword was that was used by David to kill Goliath. And it was then, here it is, being kept, really protected by the high priest of Israel. So this is something that everyone in Israel is recognizing as a very important symbol. But it is a symbol of the faith that David had in the Lord and gave him that deliverance. Back to Hebrews chapter 12 now, verses 1 and 2, as we close tonight in our study. Having mentioned David and these others, and specifically David, as we saw in Hebrews 11, verse 32, and the things that he did in verses 33 and 34, which included his slaying of Goliath, that has special meaning to us. We're told about his faith and what he did from that faith in 1 Samuel 17 for a reason. Hebrews 12, 1 and 2 says, "Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses," and that includes David. He says, "Let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God." So we look to Jesus, who is the author and finisher of our faith. But does this example of faith of David and his slaying of Goliath, as well as everything else David did in his life out of his faith in God, being a man after God's own heart, does that not encourage us to have our faith in God? It's the same God who watched over and protected and delivered David that's watching over us and that promises to deliver us out of every temptation. We studied that this morning. And is promising to work all things together for our good if we will follow his purpose to be conformed to the image of Christ. Is God there on our side to get us through every situation in our lives so that we can fulfill his purpose? And we need to believe in him and trust him like David did. And that example of David can encourage us and should encourage us in following Christ as we're seeking to be like him. This is an opportunity for anyone that's here tonight that needs to repent and be baptized in the name of Christ for the remission of your sins to come forward and express your desire to do so and confessing your faith in Christ before men this evening. We would encourage you to do that. The Lord is inviting you to do that now if that is your need. If you're a member of the Lord's body and you need the prayers of the church or need repentance tonight, you may also come at this time. So anyone that needs to respond to the Lord's invitation, won't you come right now while we stand together and sing?